Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and this week's show is 99% Star Trek. We'll be talking with Alec Peters, CEO and founder of PropWorks, about their upcoming series of Star Trek collectible auctions. They have uniforms, props, models, all sorts of fun stuff, from the affordable to the, oh wow, that costs more than my car range of prices. So we also talk with him a little bit about the upcoming feature film presentation for Star Trek Axanar. So stay tuned and we'll be right back with that interview.
The Hugo Award-winning SFSignal.com podcast is a weekly podcast produced and hosted by Patrick Hester. Episodes feature panel discussions with SFSignal.com irregulars, authors, artists, and editors, one-on-one interviews, news, and more. Past guests include Anton Strout, Gail Carriger, Ed Bryant, Michael Swanwick, Gene C. Stein, Jim Butcher, Brent Weeks, Jeff Vandermeer, Delilah S. Dawson, Tad Williams, Kate Elliott, Laura Resnick, Chuck Wendig, Jim C. Hines, Carol Berg, Joe Haldeman, Kat Rambo, William Gibson, Django Wexler, Mary Robinette Kowal, Maurice Broaddus, Lynn Michael Thomas, Shannon McGuire, Connie Willis, Patrick Rethbus, and more. To find out more and to subscribe, visit sfsignal.com or search SF Signal in iTunes so you never miss an episode.
And welcome back to more Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest today is Alec Peters, the CEO and founder of PropWorks and the instigator behind Star Trek Axanar. Thanks for coming on today, Alec.
Oh, my pleasure.
Now, this weekend, you have the first of several Star Trek props and memorabilia auctions coming up.
Right.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about some of the goodies you have coming up and the goal of the auctions?
Well, PropWorks was started in 2008 as to do the Battlestar Galactica auctions, which was the first major auction we did for a Hollywood studio. We did Battlestar Galactica was wildly successful. Mm-hmm. And then we did Stargate, Iron Man, Iron Man 2, Kevin Smith. And we did our first Star Trek auction in 2010 with CBS. And since then, we did two other smaller Star Trek auctions. And hadn't done anything since, I think, 2012 was our, I think it was 10, 11, and 12. But last year, I got a few major consignments. The first was one from a collector who's a friend of mine, who's part of our community, called Philip Gordon is his name. He had about 100 Star Trek costumes of all every major character from every show from Next Gen on, and good, really great stuff. And he decided to get out of it, so he sent us all of that. And then Gary Hutzel, who was the visual effects supervisor on Star Trek, who's a legend in the industry, he was introduced to us by Doug Drexler. We had sold Doug Drexler's collection in 2010, and he was so happy with us. And Doug's a good friend. He said to Gary. Gary was cleaning out his storage unit and said, I've got all this stuff. And Doug was like, call Alec. Better call Alec. It sounds like a cable show. And so Gary did. We cleaned out his storage unit, had amazing stuff. This auction will have more models, screen-used Star Trek models, than any auction since Christie's.
Wow.
And then Joe Longo, the longtime prop master on Star Trek, passed away last year. And his daughter contacted us. And he had a bunch of great props. So it's kind of crazy how that happened. I mean, in Star Trek, it's basically props, costumes, and models are the three big things. And we got three great collections. So what we've done is we've split it up into three auctions because, there's only so many collectors. And you don't want to swamp the market. And you also want to give collectors the chance to get everything they want. So we not only have only 100 items in each one of our first two auctions. Third one will be bigger. I'll talk about that. But we give 90-day payment plan, which no one else does. So you can literally bid on an item, win it, put 25% down, you know, within 7 days of the auction, you give us 25%, and you have 3 months to pay the balance, which is great because, you know, while we have items that will go as low as $100, there's a lot of crew gifts and graphics and stuff that's inexpensive, there's items that will go for $5,000 up to $10,000. So a lot of the costumes will cost $1,000, $2,000, $3,000.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole range. It doesn't matter how much you have. You know, it's kind of like every collector can afford a $100 item if it's something they want. So because we have the TOS phaser in the first auction, people tend to think, oh, well, this is for rich people. No, it's not. It's for everyone. There's something for everyone. Props, costumes, artwork, models, set decoration, and it's in all different price ranges.
Yeah, I saw the Sternbeck art pieces that are in this upcoming auction. I was like, wow, those are gorgeous.
Yeah, he we have some great stuff of his, and you know, just I as a collector, my couple of the items in the auction. So it's a good auction, and we already have surpassed our average price based on what's in the system already over any previous auction. So I think it's going to be a great auction.
Now, as a collector yourself, what piece would you consider the one that you would want for yourself?
Oh, well, listen, if I had the money, I would go for the TOS phaser.
Okay.
That is just, it's screen matched, it's solid, it's a beautiful piece. That is the great piece. But, you know, there's the model in the model front. We have some great models. We have the escape pod from Deep Space Nine's pilot episode Emissary, Sisko's escape pod. That's a beautiful model, and it's mounted, and it's all set up to light up. There's some great models. There's one model from the Battle of Wolf 359. There's some Jem'Hadar fighters. So the models are just awesome. And then there's... gosh, costumes. I mean, we have Wesley Crusher's sweater, which is something everyone's, you know, kind of focused on.
Uh-huh.
Classic rainbow sweater, which I know I actually talked to Will Wheaton about it. He actually knew who we were because of that. And I it's hard to pick one item because there's so many. There's the Ensign Row costume from that episode, Ensign Row.
Right.
It's unique because it actually it has a removable jacket, which you rarely saw in Star Trek. So that makes that costume special. There's Sisko's formal dress uniform from You Are Cordially Invited. And then that's really rare because there were only four of those made as far as I know. Sisko, Nog, which I actually own already, O'Brien and Bashir. So that's a great costume. And the Major Kira costume is beautiful. And we've got a 7 of 9 jumpsuit. So really there's... There's something for whichever show you like, there's something for you.
So what is it about Star Trek in particular that captivates you so much, that gets you so excited? Because I hear the excitement in your voice when you're talking about this stuff, and that shows a true geek love for Star Trek.
Oh, yeah. I'm old. people don't know it because, you know, everyone tells me I look like I'm 40, but I'm a little older than that. And I actually watched Star Trek when it was originally on TV as a little boy. I was 6 years old when Star Trek came on TV, and I was hooked. And I've been watching, you know, ever since. I was just, you know, one of those guys. It's funny to talk to people like Richard Hatch or Doug Drexler or anyone. All watch Star Trek on WPIX Channel 11, 6 o'clock every night. That was like just the way you grew up if you're mm-hmm. a kid. And so I've been in love with Star Trek all my life. And, you know, I bought my first costume, Star Trek costume, at the Christie's Star Trek auction in 2006. And I started writing my blog, StarTrekProps.com, that December. Christie's auction was October. In December, I started writing the blog. I started a forum, the Star Trek Prop Costume and Auction Forum. And one thing led to another, and that led to me getting the job to sell all the items for Battlestar Galactica, which, you know, created PropWorks and led me into people like Doug Drexler, and that led me to selling our first Star Trek auction, which led me to for introduction to CBS and working with John Van Sitters over at CBS and those great people over there and doing a license auction, which was amazing. I think the best thing, if you're an entrepreneur like I am, the best thing in the world is to make a business out of your hobby, because entrepreneurs like me, we love building stuff, you know, building companies, and to build it on something that you're so passionate about is just, it's the best thing in the world. So that's why I'm always excited. And now, you know, it's morphed into Axonar, which is a business. It's, you know, there's a whole business aspect to that. And so I just consider myself blessed. What can I say?
So I'm going to put you on the spot here. Which TV series is your favorite?
Oh, Deep Space Nine.
Really?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a little bit of an unfair question because TOS is unmatched. You really can't, it's hard to compare TOS to anything else. It's like it's in its own league, right? I don't feel it's fair to compare TOS to any of the new Star Trek. But if you're talking next gen, DS9, Voyager, Enterprise, DS9 is clearly the best Star Trek. And I know people have emotional attachments to next gen because a lot of people grew up on next gen. But I just think that Deep Space Nine is the best written new Star Trek show. And one of the reasons why I know that's true is I actually find some of the characters less engaging than other characters on other shows. But as an ensemble and as a show, Deep Space Nine is just amazing. And I think it's because the secondary recurring characters like Garak, who's my all-time favorite Star Trek character, or Gul Dukat,
mm-hmm.
or Weyoun, or you have these secondary characters, you may even call them tertiary characters, who are so awesome and so well written and so beautifully acted that it really makes DS9 is just unmatched. I just really think it's unmatched. I could watch DS9 over and over, and I rarely go back to any of the other Star Trek shows.
Interesting. So where do the movies fall for you? I mean, do you have a favorite movie?
Well, I think it's really hard not to think of Wrath of Khan as your favorite. I mean, that is such an amazing, amazing, amazing movie. So that's certainly my favorite Star Trek movie. I'm not a fan of the motion picture. I have some friends who are just apeshit over, like Rob Burnett, who's one of my dearest friends and the writer-director of Free Enterprise, so you most people know him.
Mm-hmm.
He's the editor and co-producer on Axonar. He's the editor of Prelude to Axonar. He loves the motion picture. Loves it. Loves it. Ridiculously. And I don't even argue with him because there's an emotional attachment to that movie, kind of like Next Generation.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it. Okay, that's cool. I get it that some people are really attached to that. But I think Wrath of Khan is not just the best Star Trek movie. It is one of I would argue it's one of the 10 best science fiction movies of all time.
I don't know if I'd go top 10, but it's up there. I mean, yeah, the characterizations portrayed in that movie, I'm like you. I was not impressed by the motion picture. I was kind of bored by it. Just saying. But Wrath of Khan stood out.
And Ricardo Montalban is simply the best, forget the best Khan, because I love Benedict Cumberbatch, but he's playing a different role. Khan in Star Trek II is the most amazing villain of all time. I mean, tell me a villain in movies better than Khan. It was so brilliantly written, so brilliantly acted. It was, you know, that is just a great, top to bottom, that movie is amazing. But I think the thing that's, I would say, rather than my favorite Star Trek movie is there are the Star Trek movies that I love Generations. Most people don't. I think it's an amazing movie. It has a brilliant soundtrack to start by Dennis McCarthy, who made the jump from TV to movies, which rarely happens, but he did it, and he did it brilliantly. I don't have a problem with Kirk's death like other people do. And seeing Picard and Kirk together was great. And there's just so many it is brilliantly shot. The DP did a brilliant job, and the gaffer did a brilliant job lighting that, especially all the Amargosa Observatory stuff. We see Malcolm McDowell was a great villain. There's so much good in that movie and moving. And, you know, and like all great Star Trek, Generations has a moral, it's telling you something about life and living life and what living life is all about. So I love Generations. I don't bemoan it like others do. And I also think Nemesis is an underrated movie. It has its flaws. I would take out the whole B9, B4 plot line. I think that was stupid. But that's what happens when you get an actor working as a writer. You know, Brent Spiner was one of the writers on that. And, well, what happens is his character gets way more time than he should have. That whole plot line sucked. However, the Shinzon Picard stuff was brilliant. And that was the best space battle ever in Star Trek. Yeah, I mean, just the way they... The tactics and the strategy was really, really strong. So I really like that movie despite all its flaws and despite the fact that it should be a half hour shorter. I think it would have, you know, it could have made a brilliant two-part episode, a brilliant two-part episode. And I also happen to like Insurrection, although I say, like others, that it should be a two-part episode. It's not a movie, but it's a brilliant two-part episode because, again, it tells you something. It is about what is the meaning of life and what is important in life and what is the fountain of youth and what does that mean to people and what would you do for the fountain of youth? And it was brilliantly shot. And so, you know, Insurrection, again, malign movie, would have been a great two-part episode.
Now, are there any, I don't know, props or costumes or even production materials from those movies that you would love to see out there someday?
Most of the stuff from all the original Star Treks has been released to the public one way or another, mostly through the Christie's Star Trek auction and the online auctions that happened for about 2 years after that by a company called It's a Wrap, mm-hmm. Based out in Hollywood. So there's probably 12,000 items released to the public. And so there's just a lot of stuff out there already. And anything you want pretty much is out there. I have, I think collectors always look for their one holy grail. And I've had a couple of them. I literally have Garth of Izar's original costume from Whom Gods Destroy, which I'm very proud of. I have Trelane's costume from the original series episode Squire of Gothos. Mm-hmm. I had an original Captain Kirk tunic, but I sold it to help fund buying a house because it was worth a lot of money. But yeah, so I have one of costume of every captain. I'm very happy with my collection. And so there aren't a lot of things I really chase after anymore. But the little things come up here and there. I'm starting to get an interest in tricorders because I'm kind of close to finishing off my phaser collection. But everybody has a different take on what they collect. I've got one friend who collects just Ferengi. I've got another friend who collects just Enterprise. Right? You know, different people, you'll find a character. I happen to love Nog. I have pretty much every major Nog costume that he wore.
Wow.
I've got his cadet costume. I've got his black and gray costume. I've got his dress costume from You Were Cordially Invited. And I've got his future captain's costume from The Visitor. So I think that's real interesting when someone finds a character and then collects that character or collects the show. So that's what you typically find. A lot of people try and get one costume of every major character of, say, The Next Generation. And finding a theme is really critical to your collecting.
Awesome. So how did this get you into producing Axanar?
Well, actually, this in particular, PropWorks, didn't particularly get me into producing Axanar. The way it happened was, when I got the Garth of Izar costume back in 2010, I called James Cawley. We were talking about some other things, and I mentioned to him, yeah, by the way, I got this costume. And we started talking about how great a character Garth was. And he said, you know, we're doing an episode called Origins, and we should write Garth into it. And I was like, yeah, you should. That'd be cool. And at that time, I was not a fan of fan films. I just, you know, the whole bad acting thing really just took me out of it. And he said, well, you should come play Garth. And I was like, oh, wow, that's cool. Thanks. And so I immediately started watching all the Star Trek New Voyages. I was like, well, if I'm going to do this, I better find out what these guys are doing. And most of my, at that point, most of my exposure to fan films had been Hidden Frontier, which, you know, I give those guys credit for what they were doing, but it's really bad acting. And it, and I that really grated on me. And then I watched New Voyages, and I was like, huh, okay, it's not that bad. This is, and then they had Sulu on one episode. I was like, holy crap, this is real, the real deal. So when I was up there shooting that piece of as Garth, I talked to James about the story I'd written about Garth, and he said, you need to write a script. And that's how it started. And I wrote the script. I got my friend Christian involved. I got Richard Hatch involved. And that was 4.5 years ago. And so last year, about 4 years to the day, we released Prelude to Axanar. And obviously, people know we raised $100,000, made Prelude to Axanar, and finished in 4 months, premiered at San Diego Comic-Con, and used that as our Kickstarter video to raise $638,000, which has basically gone to pre-production, getting the studio, and signing a lease for a year. It's a 3-year lease, but we paid for a year in advance, paid off the security deposit, and we're going to be we're right in the process of renovating this facility, turning it into a legitimate soundstage, and then building the sets. And then right now we just finished the script, and it's going off to our line producer, and he's going to budget it out, and we're going to find out how much money we need to actually shoot it.
So do you have any like production milestones set? I know you're aiming to shoot this year. Where are your milestones at?
Well, the first milestone is finishing the script. And once you do that, you then can budget it. So until we budget it and know how much money we need, it's a little hard to set guidelines on the shoot, because the shoot is also dependent on when we get the sets built.
Mm-hmm.
The sets, again, the sets built is based on when we get this facility renovated, which we're in the process of right now. As most people know, the production designer and construction coordinator from Babylon 5 are both on board working with us. They did this 20 years ago. John Iacovelli and Curtis Lasseter turned a warehouse in Sun Valley, here just out in the San Fernando Valley, into a soundstage, and that's where Babylon 5 was shot. And that's kind of why I sought out John Iacovelli, because I knew he did exactly what we needed to do. And now they were up here last week, and they're all excited about what we're doing. So Curtis will start working, I think, this week on putting a floor down in the warehouse for a soundstage. You put a multi-layer floor, soundproofing, interlocking floorboards, just so you can drill into it and create standing sets. And then we're going to be soundproofing the ceiling next, and then working on soundproofing the walls. And at that point, we'll be ready to start building the sets.
Excellent. Excellent. So we will keep an eye out for your more news about your progress with Axanar. And I'm definitely going to keep people up to date on this auction and the auctions coming up later in the year. People can find you at PropWorks, PropWorks.com, correct?
That is absolutely correct.
And the auction is actually going to be run through a different website.
Yes, the auction, we use Live Auctioneers, which is the premier online auction platform for live auctions. And so all that information you can find right on our website. So just go to our website and you'll be able to find it. And it's real simple. Bidding is just like it's kind of like you're bidding on eBay. You can go, you can bid in advance. You can bid live when the auction's going. So which is a little window pops up and you get to follow the auction. It's really cool. Or you can even, if you don't want to do that, you can call us up and submit a bid over the phone or through the mail, and then we bid on your behalf.
Any suggestions for new bidders, people who are new to this process?
Well, I think the first thing to understand is that in a live auction, it's pretty obvious how a live auction works, and you bid. Remember that there is a buyer's premium on top of the hammer price. So the hammer price is the price that the item closes at. But all live auctions have what's called a buyer's premium, basically because auction houses don't charge the sellers that much. It's usually 15 to 20%. that there's a buyer's premium on top of the hammer price. And in our case, it's 21% if you pay by credit card, 18% if you pay by check, money order, or cash, or Latinum. That's the important thing. So you'll be paying more. I mean, my first experience with that was at Christie's, and it was like, you know, I paid $5,000 for the Cisco costume, and I had to pay another 20% at that time on top of it. And our buyer's premium is actually the lowest in the market. I mean, Christie's, Sotheby's, Heritage all charge more, but we try and keep it at least reasonable. So that's the one thing that people need to make sure they pay attention to. We handle all the shipping and handling for cost. You just pay exactly the cost plus a very small handling fee, but it's very reasonable. So, yeah, and listen, I am always available. People can email me, alec@propworks, propworx.com. They can call me up. They can message me on Facebook. They can whatever, get a hold of me. I'm always available, StarTrekProps.com, and I'll answer any questions. I love helping new collectors out and keeping them informed on how things work so that for some people it's a new hobby. It's, you know, it can be a little confusing at first. So we like making it simple.
Awesome. Now, for people who have seen the Sci-Fi Channel show, was it Hollywood? Oh, I'm drawing a blank on the name of it all of a sudden. The prop auctions that they did, they actually had an auction location where people could actually come to see the items being bid on them live in person. Can people do that with these auctions too?
Well, it would be really boring because we don't have an auctioneer.
Okay.
We're basically sitting in front of a computer managing the auction. For the Battlestar Galactica auctions and the Stargate auctions, we actually did that. But what happened is the industry has changed so much that everyone bids online. So you just don't get many people coming to your auction. I went out to a major Hollywood memorabilia auction a few months ago, and there were 20 people in the audience, maybe.
Wow.
Yet they probably had 300 bidders. So it's not worth it to pay the auctioneer and to do all that when everyone's so comfortable sitting in their pajamas at home bidding on stuff.
Well, okay. So everybody will be at home early in the morning bidding from their computers, and hopefully you guys will have a really successful auction.
Thank you very much. It already is successful. We're so excited about it. Even if the phaser doesn't sell, it's going to be a great auction. And hopefully some of your listeners will sign up.
I will make sure that everyone gets the word. A news article went out earlier this week about the auction. Try to generate some early buzz. And of course, you know, we can talk about the upcoming auctions later. I think May and August are the next ones.
Yes. Right now it's May and August. August being at the Las Vegas Star Trek Convention, Creation Star Trek Convention in Las Vegas, the big one. We've worked with Creation before. We love those guys, and they're going to be hosting the next one. So we're real excited about that.
Excellent. And if ever PropWorks holds a Babylon 5 or original Battlestar Galactica auction, I am going to so be there.
Well, you know, we've actually had conversations with some of J. Michael Straczynski's crew because we'd love to. I am a huge Babylon 5 fan, and unfortunately, most of that stuff is already gone. It's been sold in other auctions over the years. So,
yep.
Not much left, but if there ever is, I'll let you know.
Excellent. Well, people can find links to the auction at propworks.com, propworks with an X. We will also have many, many more links and pictures over at sliceofscifi.com. Thank you, Alec, for your time today.
My pleasure. Let me get back to moving now.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
This is Kevin Murphy from Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Rift Tracks, and you have bitten off a nice big chunk of Slice of Sci-Fi.
Hey, Slicers! It's Clay from Sudbury, Canada, calling in. First off, let me tell you how great it is to hear from you guys again. It's like hearing from an old friend that you haven't seen from a long time, and now you're back. I'm just so happy. Now to the main point that I want to bring up. I just saw the trailer to the new Daredevil series on Netflix, and it looks really good. But once I saw the costume, first thing that came to my mind, it is the Daredevil from The Trial of the Incredible Hulk. It looks exactly like that. So I just want to know if anyone else thought the same thing, or am I just really showing my age? Talk to you soon. Bye.
Hi, Clay. Good to hear from you. Yeah, a lot of people on the internet have commented that that costume looks like the one from the Trial of the Incredible Hulk. But according to Marvel, that is the costume from the Frank Miller, John Romita Jr. Daredevil Man Without Fear. So this is, I don't know, I'm wondering if this goes into what we were talking about last week with Marvel changing up a bunch of the origins of a lot of their characters for this merge and to bring the comics characters more in line with the cinematic universe characters. Maybe they're cherry picking, who knows. But one other joke I saw over at IO9's articles about the new costume. Several people made the comment that, hey, he looks like the new Dread Pirate Roberts. I leave you to ponder that as you will. But that'll do it for this week's episode of Slice of Sci-Fi. As always, you can find more info over at sliceofscifi.com. You can do what Clay did and email in your voicemail or use the voicemail line. That number is 602-635-6976. You can check us out on Twitter, at Slice of Sci-Fi. You can check us out on Facebook, Slice of Sci-Fi. And we're also on Google+, somewhere out there. Thank you for those of you who continue to donate and support the show. It really, truly is welcomed and appreciated. The folks who are supporters will eventually get bonuses for their contributions. I am currently toying with starting up a Patreon account to give people who donate support through that access to certain behind-the-scenes goodies and treats that will come along when we start doing the live show again. And yes, that plan is still in the works. Still have some technical logistics to test out, but it is in the works, and I really, really hope it'll come about soon. And another great big thank you to the band Sci Fried for the wonderful, wonderful new theme music we have. So that'll do it for this episode. We'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.